Hello and welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. I'm Tracy Sable.
Every state that has pro-life protections allows an exception if an abortion is needed for the life of the mother.
Idaho's life-affirming law challenged at the U.S. Supreme Court. The national implications this case could have on U.S. hospitals.
The religious exemption, as you mentioned, is extremely narrow. Jesus himself wouldn't qualify because he served people of all faith traditions.
Forcing Catholic nuns to cover abortion in their employee health care insurance plans. An attorney defending them explains the state mandate that is threatening their religious liberty.
Planned Parenthood performs almost 40% of all the abortions that take place in the U.S.
Disturbing data. A record number of children killed by abortion, according to Planned Parenthood's annual report. We break down the numbers. Clashes outside of the U.S. Supreme Court Wednesday between pro-life and pro-abortion protesters. This while inside the courthouse, justices heard oral arguments in the latest major abortion case. The case pits the state of Idaho against the federal government, centering around Idaho's Defense of Life Act. The law protects the lives of women and the unborn, only allowing abortion if the life of the mother is in danger. The Biden administration is suing Idaho, saying that the state law conflicts with a federal law known as the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, or EMTALA. It states that emergency rooms are required to provide care for pregnant women and their unborn children. In 2022, the Biden administration released new guidance on EMTALA, which required doctors to provide an abortion when necessary to preserve the, quote, health of a woman. The Biden administration argues that Idaho's law prevents ER doctors from offering an abortion if a woman needs one in a medical emergency. Some medical professionals claim that they are confused by the Idaho law. But Ingrid Skop, a pro-life OBGYN doctor, has practiced under EMTALA and says it has never been confusing.
Every single state that has pro-life protections allows that intervention. Abortions in this situation are rarely needed. As an obstetrician practicing for over 30 years, I have not needed to perform an abortion to save a mother's life.
The Idaho Attorney General contends the state law does not conflict with EMTALA, but the Justice Department argues that the state law is too narrow and forces doctors to delay care.
Today, doctors in Idaho and the women in Idaho are in an impossible position. If a woman comes to an emergency room facing a grave threat to her health, but she isn't yet facing death, doctors either have to delay treatment and allow her condition to materially deteriorate, or they're airlifting her out of the state so she can get the emergency care that she needs.
Doesn't matter whether it happens tomorrow or next week or a month from now.
There is no imminency requirement. This whole notion of delayed care is just not consistent with the Idaho Supreme Court's reading of the statute and what the statute says.
Not to further explain this case and its potential implication, let's bring in John Bursch, Senior Counsel and Vice President of Appellate Advocacy at Alliance Defending Freedom. Idaho's law bans abortion unless it's deemed medically necessary to save a mother's life. That said, John, how does this law put women's lives at risk or potentially delay care, as some say, if at all?
That's really ridiculous. People are making up all kinds of hypotheticals that don't involve real medical cases to try to scare the justices into giving them a political result that they want instead of a legal result. The Idaho Supreme Court made clear that when a doctor is judging whether an abortion is necessary to save a woman's life, that it doesn't have to be medical certainty, but simply in the doctor's best judgment. And it says it doesn't have to be an imminent risk to her life, but one that is likely to occur. And so there's plenty of flexibility in those joints for the doctors to make sure that that women are getting all the protective care that they need and at the same time giving the maximum protection to the unborn child. And after all, that's what the federal law was specifically designed to do as well, to protect the mom, but also to protect the baby. After all, there are two patients here. And one of the crazy things about what the Biden administration is saying, this EMTALA law was passed in the 1980s, signed into law by President Reagan after being endorsed by majorities in both parties in Congress. And to somehow now claim that 38 years after the fact, it's an abortion mandate, I mean, that's something only a fiction writer could come up with. And yet they did after the Dobbs decision, because the administration hated the result so much that they needed to find other federal ways to require abortion.
Yeah, I'm curious about this. What are your thoughts, on the oral arguments that were made on Wednesday at the Supreme Court? And what were your big takeaways?
Well, the big takeaway for me was an exchange between the administration's lawyer and Justice Alito. And he pointed to that language in the statute about the importance of protecting the unborn child in the emergency room and asked her how she could reconcile that with an abortion mandate. And it really tied her up in knots. She didn't have a clean answer for that and just said, well, the mother's interests always prevail. Well, that's not what the statute says at all. If we're going to enforce the law, we need to enforce all of it. And in many instances where there are emergencies, it's entirely possible and preferable to treat both patients, mom and baby, and to save them both. And there are plenty of examples of that happening in real life.
John, I know we won't know anything until June, but if this were to be overturned, this Idaho law, if it were to be overturned, what would that do to ER doctors and also conscious rights?
Well, that's an interesting question, because up until just last month during the FDA abortion pill case, another Alliance Defending Freedom pro-life case at the Supreme Court, the federal government had taken the strict position that doctors and hospitals have no conscience rights when it comes to emergency rooms. Now, in the FDA case, the same government lawyer admitted that doctors have conscience rights, but she didn't say that hospitals did. And today she started to concede that hospitals do too. So they're kind of spinning around in circles as they're trying to decide what position they need to take in order to get a win in this case, which is kind of ridiculous. But the reality is that a legal conscience protection doesn't mean very much in the abortion context, because a doctor, let's say they're an OBGYN, they're usually on an upper floor of the hospital delivering babies, but they're also a hospitalist. And so they help women who are having pregnancy complications in the ER. And when a woman comes in and they go down, they may have a religious conscience objection on file with the general counsel's office. But as they go into the emergency room and they're scrubbing up, they don't know whether they're confronting a miscarriage or if they're confronting an ectopic pregnancy or if they're participating in a possible completion of an abortion based on someone taking an abortion pill like mifepristone. And so we really need clear, broad protections, not the kind of statements at oral argument that the government was getting here. And we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that pro-life doctors will never have to participate in abortions in the emergency room or anywhere else.
Yeah, in this case, out of Idaho. But what impact could it have nationwide?
Well, Idaho is one of 22 states that have pro-life laws. Some, like Idaho's, begin at conception. Others are fetal heartbeat laws. Others have other lines. But every single one of those could be overturned by the doctor's subjective judgment about what care he or she thinks is necessary. So instead of state law regulating the practice of medicine and protecting human life, federal government would defer to the doctors in almost every case. And that's not what EMTALA was ever intended to be. EMTALA was an amendment to the Medicare Act. And the very first provision of the Medicare Act says the federal government is not supposed to direct or control state law medical practice or any particular treatments. And so really what the Biden administration is doing is standing the entire statutory scheme on its head in its zeal to find some federal right to abortion.
And John, how would this impact Catholic hospitals, if at all?
Well, that's a great question, because previously the Biden administration had said hospitals don't have religious conscience rights. In fact, they until very recently said that doctors don't even have religious conscience rights when it comes to the emergency rooms. But at the argument today, some of the justices specifically raised the issue of Catholic hospitals that take Medicare dollars and yet have to follow the USCCB's ethical and religious directives, which prohibit abortions except to save the mother's life. And the administration's attorney kind of hemmed and hawed a little little bit and seem to acknowledge that those Catholic hospitals and their doctors would be protected. But that's not written into any federal regulation or any interpretive order. And so that's cold comfort to pro-life doctors who want to make sure they don't have to participate in abortions in the emergency room. So we're hopeful that the court will not only recognize those conscience rights, but will just say that this law, that federal law, which protects life, does not override Idaho's law, which ensures the protection of unborn life.
John, before I let you go, final thoughts on this.
Well, we were really happy with how things went today. We think the justices' questions really exposed the inconsistencies in the administration's positions. We're hopeful that the justices will uphold Idaho's life and uphold the right of all Americans in their states to be able to protect innocent unborn life, and that the federal government can't cram abortion mandates on them, particularly using laws that themselves are supposed to protect life.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. John, thank you so much for your time today and for your insights. We really appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you very much, Tracy. God bless you and EWTN.
The Supreme Court heard oral arguments earlier this year on limiting access to mifepristone, one of two pills used to chemically induce an abortion. The lawsuit brought by the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine challenges the Food and Drug Administration's deregulation of the drug, particularly its prescription without an in-person doctor's visit and its distribution through the mail. Mifepristone is used in more than half of U.S. abortions. We will, of course, provide complete coverage of this case and the Idaho case when decisions come down from the Supreme Court. On Wednesday, Arizona's State House narrowly passed a bill to repeal a law protecting life from the moment of conception. The pro-life law was recently upheld by the Arizona State Supreme Court and sparked a national uproar from pro-abortion advocates. Three House Republicans joined Democrats in passing the repeal. It now heads to the state Senate, where Republicans have a narrow majority. Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs says that she will sign it into law if it is passed in the state Senate. A similar case in New York. Catholic and Anglican nuns, as well as other faith organizations, are challenging a New York regulation that could require them to cover abortions deemed medically necessary. There is only a very narrow exemption. Per the state regulation, a faith-based organization would only qualify for an exemption if it primarily employs people who share in its religious tenets and primarily serves people who share in its religious tenets. And that would disqualify many faith-based organizations like the Missionaries of Charity founded by Mother Teresa, who provides services to anyone regardless of their faith. Eric Baxter, Vice President and Senior Counsel with the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, is helping to defend the nuns in this case, and he joins us now to talk about the case. Eric, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. First off, can you walk us through this case?
Absolutely. This is an effort by the state of New York to force religious institutions to cover surgical abortions against their faith. It's a requirement for all employers who offer insurance to provide this type of coverage. The religious exemption, as you mentioned, is extremely narrow. Jesus himself wouldn't qualify because he served people of all faith traditions. And so it's really just asking, we're asking the court to recognize that people are still religious even when they move outside the walls of their church and serve people of other faiths. This case has already been once to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court reversed the New York courts and said, go back and consider this under a new decision that had just come out called Fulton versus City of Philadelphia. So we're back under that ruling, asking the New York courts to get it right the second time.
Yeah, Eric, does this New York regulation, does it defy federal protections of religious liberty?
Absolutely. The First Amendment clearly exempts religious organizations from these types of laws, protects their ability to exercise their religion without having to do things that violate their faith. It's, of course, anathema to religious organizations who are here to promote life, to promote goodness, to promote light, to pay for abortions against their will. And so the First Amendment clearly protects that religious conduct, and the statute is wrongly ignoring those federal protections.
What about national implications here? You know, if this case were to win or lose, what could happen?
Yeah, if the state prevails in this case, it would send a message to states and governments everywhere that they can trample on religious believers, that they can distinguish between those people who only worship within the four walls of their own church and never go outside to serve others. So that would send a horrible message that, you know, that worshiping somehow in the church is the only form of religious exercise and ignoring the rights of people to actually be in their communities doing good in the name of religion. And so we just think it's incredibly important for the court to get this right.
Yeah, and what's at stake here?
And this is really about the definition of religion and who has the right to decide what it means to practice religion. The Supreme Court's made clear, you know, 100 times that First Amendment protects the exercise of religion and not just religious belief. And so that is really what's at the crux of this decision, and the right of religious people to live out their faith in the public square, not limiting them to what they do within the four walls of their formal churches.
Eric, thank you so much for coming on today and sorting this all out. We really appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you.
Coming up, Catholic support for abortion. A study reveals why many U.S. Catholics do not align with church teaching. Plus, startling data released by Planned Parenthood on the number of lives lost to abortion. We have a closer look at their annual report and with expert analysis. A record number of abortions performed by Planned Parenthood, according to the organization's latest report. And even though they have less clients, taxpayer dollars continue to funnel in at higher rates. 392,715 children died from abortions in the U.S. between October of 2021 and September of 2022. According to the law firm Liberty Counsel, that averages to 1,075 preborn babies killed every day, or 44 children every hour. Taxpayer dollars keep rolling in for the 501c3 company, with nearly $700 million from the government, reported for the year ending June 20th, 2023. The company also boasted about helping more than 33,000 people get transportation and travel support, financial assistance, and referrals they needed to get an abortion. And out of the 600 Planned Parenthoods across the nation, 45 affiliates offered so-called gender-affirming hormone therapy in 2022. So what do these numbers really mean? Dr. Michael New, assistant professor of practice at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America and a senior associate scholar at the Charlotte Loesscher Institute, joins us now for analysis on these numbers. Good to be with you, Michael. We appreciate it. So what are the most shocking numbers out of this report to you?
What struck me is that Planned Parenthood did over 390,000 abortions last year. That's a 5% increase. Abortion constitutes over 97% of their pregnancy resolution services. And for every adoption referral, they did 228 abortions. All this time, they're doing fewer pap tests, fewer cancer screenings, and less preventive care. So it's all really shocking.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. I mean, you know, fewer preventive care visits. What more can you tell about that? Because they really do tout that.
Yeah, preventive care went down by 31%. So it really makes it clear that Planned Parenthood's first priority is abortion. You know, the number of abortions go up nearly every year. Planned Parenthood performs almost 40% of all the abortions that take place in the U.S. Many services are going down, especially healthcare services. And again, they did 31% fewer preventive care visits this past year.
Yeah, and the report also talks about education. They say that they've reached 1.2 million people through their programming and through their outreach, and that 3 million views via educational videos. What kind of impact does that have?
That's a very negative impact. I mean, the sort of, you know, quote-unquote education they provide is often sex education that really encourages a lot of sexual risk-taking and encourages promiscuity. So it really, you know, degrades the culture and really promotes a lot of, you know, unhealthy behavior, in my opinion.
Yeah, and Michael, the report also indicates that Planned Parenthood lawyers, they have actually opened up 30 cases challenging pro-life laws in 16 states. What more do you know about that, and what does that say about the organization?
Well, Planned Parenthood's priority, you know, is abortion, and this annual report makes that very clear. And I think that also creates a very strong argument to defund Planned Parenthood, you know, that taxpayer dollars do indirectly subsidize a lot of these political activities, a lot of these lawsuits, and the fact they're investing significant resources in trying to overturn these protective pro-life laws, again, really does show that abortion is their top priority.
You know, we also mentioned this, Michael, that many of the clinics are now offering so-called gender-affirming care. Talk to us about that shift and what's going on there.
what's interesting, they do acknowledge in the report that they do these, you know, hormone blockers and other forms of gender-affirming care. They don't really give us hard numbers. You know, they're willing to kind of advertise the number of abortions they do. They don't really provide much in the way of data when it comes to this quote-unquote gender-affirming care. So they seem to realize that this is pretty sensitive politically. They don't provide any hard data on the number of kind of the amount of gender quote-unquote affirming care that they do.
Overall, what do these numbers say to you?
Basically, every time Planned Parenthood issues an annual report, it's kind of the same story. More abortions, more taxpayer dollars, less health care. This trend has been going on for, you know, years and years, and I think it just shows once and for all that Planned Parenthood's main priority is abortion, and that whatever health care they do is just for kind of PR purposes. Their main purpose is to provide abortions and make abortion policy much more permissive.
Well, Dr. New, always great to be with you. Thank you so much for your analysis. Always appreciate it. God bless.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Our new data from Pew Research indicates roughly 6 out of 10 Catholics believe abortion should be legal in all or most cases.
One of the things the numbers tell us is also that there are a lot of not well-catechized Catholics because they don't understand what the church teaches and why.
The report finds 39% of Catholics say abortion should be legal in most cases, 22% in all cases. It also found that Catholics align closer to their political leanings rather than church teaching on the issue. 78% of Catholic Democrats say that it should be legal in most or all cases, while 43% of Catholic Republicans who say the same. Well, that does it for our show this week. Be sure to sign up for the Pro-Life Pulse weekly newsletter at ewtn.com/pro-life. And remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.